Doctor Who Short Trips. The British Invasion by Ian Potter. Read by Wendy Padbury. The TARDIS eased itself into reality in the shadow of a tall brick tower near a broad, slow river. Ordinarily, the grinding roar of its engines might have turned heads, but not today. A nearby brass band drowned out the howl of its arrival, and the eyes of passers-by were drawn elsewhere. The Doctor swung open the TARDIS's police box door and breathed in city air. Not bad, he smiled. Industrial, but not the worst vintage. Two more figures popped up behind him, jostling him out of the ship. So, where have we landed now? Asked Jamie, a young, kilted Scotsman with wary eyes. Oh, don't you know? The Doctor replied, fruitlessly attempting to smarten his shabby old jacket. Well, how would I? Jamie objected. A young woman in a sparkly jumpsuit gently squeezed by. What do you think, Zoe? Zoe took in her surroundings analytically, the way she'd been trained to since childhood. Petrol cars growled by on a raised bridge to the right, and a strange wrought-iron greenhouse affair stood raised a little way off to the left. Beyond it, near the river's edge, a mass of men in brown coats and trilby hats had gathered to watch some kind of display. "Well, it's the past," she said hesitantly, searching her eidetic memory for a match. She stepped forwards to take a better look around. "There is something familiar about that skyline." "Oh, it's London again, isn't it?" said Jamie. The Doctor clapped his hands gleefully. Yes, the south bank of the Thames. Oh, we can't have been here since Sewer. Oh, let's see now. 1668? Oh, no, Zoe cried, pointing to her left. That can't be right. Jamie and the Doctor hurried to her side. Further down the riverbank, surrounded by milling crowds, stood an enormous metallic dome. At its side loomed what looked like a huge robotic creature, a gleaming spire of metal, taller than any building, atop three spindly, insect-like legs. It's a spaceship, Doctor, like the Dominators. The Doctor chuckled. No, those aren't spaceships, dear me. A great cigar-shaped thing in an upside-down bowl? Who'd fly about in things like that? Honestly, you two see alien invasions everywhere. But it looks so modern, Zoe protested. Like something from my time. Well, that's rather the point, Zoe. They're about looking forward to your time. This is 1951, you see. The British have just been through a rather nasty war. So they've decided to have a big party to cheer everyone up and look to the future. It's called the Festival of Britain. That's the Dome of Discovery. It's a sort of museum of all the historic achievements and scientific advances Britain's made over the centuries. Oh, so what's that big pointy thing at the side? Asked Jamie. That's the Skylon. That's sort of the symbol of the festival. A piece of spectacular engineering, built just to show it can be done. All the ingenuity that's been devoted to war, redirected to make a shining spearhead to the stars. It doesn't look much like a spearhead to me. The Doctor rolled his eyes and wandered over to a nearby kiosk where a man was selling brochures. 2 and 6. He patted his pockets and started exploring his jacket. No, that's not right. That one's not been minted yet. That one's chocolate. Eventually, he found the right money and returned with a festival guidebook. He studied the map inside, trying to get his bearings. So we... Oh, my word. A beaming smile transformed his face as he looked from street to map and back again. Look at that! Zoe and Jamie followed his eyes. He was gazing up at the brick tower they'd arrived by. Perched incongruously on top was a radio telescope dish. Oh, isn't it lovely? It was not perhaps the greatest wonder they'd seen, but it had clearly excited the doctor. Oh, I should like to have a play with that, wouldn't you? Oh, aye, definitely, said Jamie, then whispered to Zoe, what is it? Now, there's warlike urges redirected again, you see, grinned the doctor. That's an old anti-aircraft gun mounting that's sat on. The tower, said Jamie. That's a big gun. No, just the bit for moving the dish around. The tower's an old shot tower. See, said Jamie triumphantly, for shooting from. The doctor shook his head. No, not quite. It was for making shot. What was the big problem with lead shot in your day, Jamie? Ooh, apart from people trying to fire it at me. Well, yes, obviously. I don't know. How often it missed? Well, that wasn't a problem from my point of view. No, not like that. I meant generally. It was made from moulded lead. Not very smooth, not very aerodynamic. So it didn't always fly straight. Well, a little after your time, they solved that by making shot in towers like this one. You'd pour the lead down from the top, and it'd fall in little beads, like rain. Then at the bottom, splash. It lands in some water and cools into smooth, round balls. Aye, very clever, I'm sure. While the two men talked, Zoe watched the crowds. There was something strangely appealing about the almost algorithmic patterns of people moving en masse. Groups cohered and then broke up in pulsing waves, like flocking birds. Individuals, minutes apart, quite independently, chose the same path to follow through the South Bank's attractions and stands. Occasional queues to nothing emerged spontaneously when small knots of visitors dawdled somewhere, just a little too long. It was a dance Zoe felt apart from. She'd never really known big crowds. She'd been taken from the city as a child and brought up away from her peers. All her elite training had been preparing her for a life apart in space, monitoring radio signals and watching the stars. A life lived in just a handful of rooms with just a handful of colleagues. The doctor and Jamie had shown her a richer, fuller life since. But standing here now, Zoe still felt an outsider as she longed to lose herself in that great human sea. A colourful and slightly grubby handkerchief wafted before her eyes. Come along, Zoe. Look lively. We're off to visit the dome. The doctor had got an idea in his head. And when that happened, he was very hard to stop. According to the doctor's brochure, there was an exhibit in the Dome of Discovery that let you control a transmitter attached to the Shot Tower telescope and bounce messages off the moon that he was curiously keen to see. Jamie was not so excited. Oh, what do we want to go to a museum for? We can visit the past any time. Well, past, Jamie, yes, but well, that's quite different from history. Jamie didn't immediately grasp the distinction. Anyway, it's not just a museum of the past. It's about exploration and finding things out. It's got a section on space, full of predictions for the future. The doctor pressed the brochure into Jamie's hand. But we've been to the future as well, he protested. We've even been to a museum about space in the future. The doctor rubbed his hands. Well, yes, but museums don't just tell you about the past and predict the future, you know. They tell you what people in the present think about their pasts and futures. That's the important thing. They tell you where you are now. Jamie flicked idly through the brochure. Most people find that out just by staying in one place. Yes. And isn't it good we're not most people? It seemed the building they were passing now was called the Royal Festival Hall. Apparently it had been opened by King George VI. The sentence gave Jamie a strange feeling of loss. When he'd first joined the Doctor, he had been fighting George II. The dome's interior was immediately impressive. Towering exhibits caught the eye on every side. A giant illuminated dodecahedron, a sailing ship's mast, a vast optical telescope, an enormous totem pole. But all of them were dwarfed by the size of the space. A lattice of triangular girders curved high overhead, supporting hundreds of tessellating roof slats. The chatter of visitors echoed back from the ceiling, transformed into a single sibilant whisper, giving the place a feel of some great secular cathedral. The Doctor raced ahead of his friends, darting from exhibit to exhibit, charging up escalators to see the displays on higher levels, whooping and hollering with every new discovery. "Oh, there are real live husky dogs in here!" He oohed and aahed appreciatively at plans to irrigate Commonwealth lands, and chuckled darkly at a great gobstopper cross-section of the earth, with its interior tidily labelled. He gazed in awe at huge model insects suspended from above, only becoming a little pensive when he read the accompanying panels on pest control. He was having a whale of a time. "He's only really happy when he's busy, isn't he?" said Jamie. "Well, he likes finding things out, doesn't he?" said Zoe. "He likes knowing more than everyone else, do you mean?" "Oh, I'm not sure that's fair." "Aye, well, you would side with him, wouldn't you?" The Doctor beckoned them over to the ship's mast. "Cook's Endeavour," he said proudly. "I was on that, you know, back in the days of George III. Jamie sighed. "Is something wrong?" asked the Doctor. "No, no, everything's fine." Somehow, it had never really occurred to Jamie before that the future all his new friends came from had been built by a succession of King Georges. There was no sign of the MacCrimmons in this history of achievement and exploration, no room for the Jacobite cause anywhere in this museum's vision of progress and advancement. He suddenly felt more alone than he had in years. There was a word he'd learned for this museum's exhibits on his travels. Propaganda. "Oh, let's play with the telescopes, shall we?" The Doctor skimmed excitedly through the guidebook as they headed up to the space displays. "Somewhere along here, you can direct the shot tower transmitter. You align it with the moon and shoot off a signal at the speed of light. That bounces back here and gets picked up by the dish 2 and a bit seconds later. They play it back to you on a big cathode ray display." He rested his hand on a metal railing, then recoiled wildly. "Ooh, static," he yelped. Jamie couldn't help laughing. "It's not funny," Doctor protested. "It hurts. It's messed up my hair." He jabbed a sparking finger at Jamie and a crackle passed between them. "See?" "Oh, that's just a tickle," said Jamie. "Is it? It's made all your leg hairs stand on end," the Doctor replied. "Your knees look like great gooseberries." He trailed off. Ahead of them, a middle-aged woman was repeatedly and furiously striking a display. She was a slight figure, lean and angular, in a black and white houndstooth skirt and jacket, which seemed a little large on her. But her energy belied her size. She kicked out at the metal casing of a large beige and green control panel. Sheets of aluminium foil rattled at the impact on either side. Hesitantly, the Doctor approached her, clearing his throat. "Excuse me, madam," he asked softly. "Are you all right?" "Miss," she snapped. There was a slightly alarming intensity about her. "And no, I'm not." "Is This thing won't work. The doctor smiled kindly. Well, you know, you won't get a bit of complicated machinery to work by thumping it, now will you? Jamie and Zoe exchanged glances. The doctor suddenly noticed the curved screen of a cathode ray tube built into the exhibit. Oh dear. This is the radio telescope control unit, isn't it? The woman sighed. No. Should be, but it doesn't work. Well, never mind. Let's report the problem to the people in charge and see if we can't get it fixed. I am one of the people in charge. Ah. Imogen Patton. The woman held out a thin white hand. Technical assistant to the theme conveners. Oh, I see, Jamie nodded. What does that mean? It means I designed this useless exhibit. What's exactly wrong with it? Asked Zoe. Imogen explained. Well, it doesn't match my idea, she said wearily. I'm a radio astronomer, you see. That's what attracted me here. Giving the public some notion of just what's flying about in the void out there. Getting the excitement of all that information flowing through space into people's heads. So you came up with a display that would let visitors radio the moon? Well, yes. I was working on telescope arrays in the north, and the thought just popped into my head. Why not let the public send and receive their own messages? Well, I thought it was rather clever, so I got myself seconded here and started work with the designers, and it was all going marvellously, until we found we couldn't actually send a strong enough signal with the equipment we could muster. Any messages we tried to relay just broke up in the ionosphere. Quantum decoherence, said Zoe sagely. Imogen registered surprise. Zoe has done a little work in radio astronomy herself, said the doctor airily. Well then, as a scientist, you'll understand my frustration. I wanted to make the exhibit work, but the designers here only cared about it looking impressive. Why not just use the dish to receive? That'll work, they said. So that's what we've got. An exhibit that just displays dull old solar rays and a few rewritten display panels. But our guidebook says you can transmit to the moon, the doctor protested. No one cares, said Imogen. I come back and try to rework it, see if there's any way I can strengthen the signal, but they all just laugh. She looked almost broken. They're not from my world, you see. They don't understand. Jamie hadn't followed all of Imogen's story, but he understood the emotion behind it. Here was someone who'd been looked down on because of her background and mocked for trying her hardest. Just at that moment, he felt they were very much alike. Zoe had turned to the doctor. Can't we help her? She said. Imogen's situation had touched her too. The doctor pondered. Well, it's a question of interference, really, Zoe. Oh, yes. Signal-to-noise ratios. No, our interference. He bent his head close to Zoe's ear. In your history, he whispered. It's not a lot of interference, though, is it? Zoe hissed back. All we'd be doing is making this exhibit match what the book says it does. A few hundred people will see something slightly different and will make one person happier. Well, there can't be anything wrong in that.
I suppose not, said the doctor finally.
It'd just be a few ripples after all. A weak signal breaking up into noise like Miss Patton's radio waves. Oh, why not?
Jamie joined their huddle. What are you two whispering about?
Helping Imogen.
Oh, good, said Jamie.
I think the problem might be trying to aim that thing at the moon in the day, when it's mostly out at night.
The doctor smiled.
Thank you, Jamie. I'm glad you've given this some thought.
Miss Patton, he announced, I believe we may be able to help you.
Imogen beamed.
Yes, I think I should be able to lay my hands on a booster that'll get this little lot working.
The doctor patted the control panel. A small spark shot into his fingertips.
It is properly earthed, isn't it?
Not long after, the three travellers stood once again in the shot tower's shadow. Zoe cricked her neck to look up at the dish.
Quite a way up, she said.
Oh, don't worry. There are stairs inside the tower, and Jamie is quite fit.
Oh, I'm going up there, am I?
The doctor turned to Jamie.
Well, we'll need someone to attach the signal booster at the top there, and you are the strongest and the fittest.
Are you sure it won't be too complicated for me? Asked Jamie dryly.
Oh, don't worry, I'll write you out some instructions, said the doctor, struggling in the gloom with the TARDIS lock. Just make sure none of the words are too hard, eh?
Jamie's sarcasm was wasted as the doctor continued in his efforts to turn the door key.
Oh, why's this blessed thing so stiff?
It was almost as if the ship didn't want to let him back in. It gave the doctor pause.
I wonder, he said, if we're not being just a little unwise here. What if that exhibit, working properly, were to be the one thing that opens up a child's mind? A mind that might otherwise have been closed. I thought an open mind was a good thing, Doctor.
Oh, it is, Jamie, it is. Though not so open that any old thought can just barge in and rearrange the furniture. What if enthusing one child were to be enough to change the future?
Oh, don't talk daft now, Jamie replied. You'd never do a thing if you thought like that. You'd have to hide in your TARDIS all the while and watch everything on your screen.
The doctor seemed thoughtful for a moment, then suddenly his resolve was back.
No, you're right, Jamie. We do bolder things than this every day, don't we? There's no point in travelling if you never roll up your sleeves. I just worried for a second that I had let myself be swayed by fellow feeling.
He turned the TARDIS key decisively, and the door creaked open.
Oh, where is it?
The doctor muttered later. The TARDIS was being less than cooperative.
What exactly are you looking for? Did take too long to explain, Jamie.
The dismissiveness stung. The doctor seemed to have scattered most of the contents of a large wooden chest across the control room, yet still more objects flew out as the doctor burrowed deeper inside.
Are you certain there's one in there?
Asked Zoe as a comical hat skimmed past her.
Almost everything I want's in here if I look hard enough.
There's a lot more in it than when I went in there.
I probably wanted less at the time. I might have had a tidy.
This seemed unlikely.
Honestly, all I need is a device to boost radio transmissions that won't be out of place at the start of the 1950s, said the doctor tetchily.
Then he gasped.
Ah, the very thing!
He produced a spindly mass of metal and wires, very nearly the length of the wooden chest, and brandished it exultantly.
You know, he twinkled, I think the TARDIS was trying to hide anachronisms from me.
It was getting chillier now. The sun was starting to sink and the crowds along the south bank were thinning out. The doctor sat on a cold stone spiral staircase inside the shot tower, pressed up against a locked wooden door. Jamie and Zoe stood behind him. They'd been there a while.
Me, 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 me.
The doctor was waving a thin metal cylinder around the door handle and humming tunelessly to himself.
La, 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 la. No, not quite the right harmonic.
He made an adjustment to the cylinder and tried again. The door lock clunked.
Ah, there we are. Just a matter of finding the right vibrations.
The doctor passed the cylinder to Jamie.
You may need this if there are any more locked doors. Press the base down and point it at the keyhole. It's about the right setting, so don't play with it.
Jamie awkwardly tucked the cylinder in a sock.
Now, have you got everything? The doctor asked.
I should hope so.
Jamie was somewhat encumbered. He held a clump of scrawled instructions in one hand, a walkie-talkie radio protruded from his jacket, and a mass of wires and bulky ironmongery were draped over his shoulder.
Oh, it's like being a piper again, he said.
I could help, said Zoe. You know, with opening doors and any of the more technical bits.
Zoe, I might have been born in the 1700s, but I do know how to open doors.
Oh, you know what I mean, said Zoe.
Aye, I do.
The doctor seemed slightly flustered.
No, I should like to have you with me, I think, Zoe. I want to make sure we do all the electrical side at the dome correctly.
He smiled at Jamie.
We'll radio you when we know the power's off and it's safe to make adjustments. I've made the instructions as clear as I can, but if you have any problems, just call us up.
He pointed to the radio in Jamie's pocket.
I've made the instructions quite clear on that, too. Jamie resolved there and then he'd be asking for no help whatsoever and started up the stairs.
As Zoe and the doctor headed back to the dome, they heard a dull creaking from overhead. The dish was starting to move, positioning itself on its gun mounting to line up with the moon.
Nearly time, said the doctor.
He seemed distracted, Zoe thought, his mind elsewhere. When they got back to the dome, the doctor and Zoe found the space exhibits cordoned off with roped barriers and out-of-order signs.
Clever, Imogen, said Zoe, ducking under the rope.
Yes.
Funny how everyone just obeys signs like these, said the doctor as he followed. They make me want to peek even more.
Well, you're not exactly typical, are you, Doctor? Said Zoe.
Most people go along with the crowd.
I know, said the doctor. There'd probably be no crowds if they didn't.
We're all set, Imogen panted as they approached. The electricity's off. You can connect your equipment.
She looked tired, if anything, even paler and thinner than when they'd seen her last. The doctor radioed Jamie.
You're safe to start, Jamie. The power's down. Just follow the instructions.
Jamie sent back a terse reply.
Take care, won't you?
Zoe added.
Oh, don't fret. I'll not break any of your precious equipment.
The radio went quiet.
He's not been quite himself today, has he? The doctor mused. Jamie's rigging up a signal booster, he explained to fill an awkward silence. Bit of a lash-up, but it should serve for the duration of the festival. I'm sure it'll be fine for our purposes, said Imogen.
High above, on top of the shop tower, Jamie busied himself in the cold, windy air, following the doctor's scribbled directions to the letter.
I'll show them, he thought as he clambered through the struts of the telescope.
Getting this right felt like the most important thing in the world right now. About a quarter of an hour later, Jamie was done. He radioed back to the doctor, his voice filling the now almost empty dome.
All set,
he said.
Exactly as you wanted. Are you away from the transmitter?
Aye, I'm by the top of the stairs.
Well done.
The doctor gave Imogen a thumbs up.
Miss Patton, I think we're ready.
Imogen reached into the exhibit's innards and flicked a contact switch. Something began to crackle. At first, Zoe thought it was the machine. Then she realized Imogen was shaking. Her whole body seemed to be vibrating, the houndstooth pattern of her clothes blurring from black and white to grey.
What's happening?
Imogen howled, her hair swaying and pulsing in rhythmic patterns about her face, sparks flying from her quivering fingers. The doctor could barely look.
Oh, no.
She didn't even know, he whispered. Electrical energy blazed out of Imogen's horrified mouth, coursing through the sheets of foil at either side of her. Then her whole body fell away, crumbling like dust. Hovering where it had stood was a shimmering mass of light.
Doctor!
Began Zoe. Miss Patton's a Varden, Zoe, said the doctor grimly. An alien creature made from waves of mental energy. I think she's been one for some time.
Sparks arced out from the thing that had once been Imogen.
You know us, then?
It said, in a voice that fizzed and hissed. Oh, yes. I first met your kind long ago, and I defeated them.
Lightning forks danced from the Varden towards the doctor's head. He grimaced.
No, no, you don't. You don't get in my head that easily.
Don't I?
Crackled the Varden.
After I've been nudging your thoughts along for so long. All those odd little ideas that brought you here, did you really believe they were yours?
But you don't have the power to control, do you? The doctor rejoined. You're too weak. You can only suggest.
But suggestion is so often stronger than control, don't you think? I can help you think it, if you like.
The doctor cried out as more sparks flashed across his temples.
No! Don't hurt him! Zoe begged. Just tell us what you want!
It wants to conquer, the doctor snarled. It's a Varden. That's what they always want.
I am a Varden vanguard, hissed the voice. One of many. We travel ahead of our main fleets, seeking territories to claim.
The Vardens usually prefer to get solid and go about in spaceships, Zoe. Can you think why?
Fresh bolts of energy shot out, cutting the doctor short.
My energy was diffused when I reached Earth. I had suffered interference and was close to joining the ancestral hymn.
Cosmic microwave background noise, Zoe. It's what dead Vardens end up as. The fizz of deep space. I expect you've heard it on the wheel.
I found a mind open to the stars, which took in my form and nurtured it,
the Varden continued.
You ate her like a parasite.
I gave her an idea to live for when she had little else. The idea of transmitting radio between this world and its moon.
Why? Asked Zoe.
To rebuild myself.
The Vardens are living waveforms, said the doctor. I imagine our friend here wanted to convert itself into a long-standing wave between the Earth and the Moon. If correctly phased, every echo back would increase the wave's amplitude and boost its strength.
Something you have finally made possible.
The doctor's radio spluttered into life. It was Jamie.
Sorry to interrupt you, whatever you are, but there's something I think you've forgotten. You need all these trinkets up here in one piece for all that.
His familiar battle cry rang out.
Craig and Tom!
No, Jamie, you mustn't. Don't touch the equipment, the doctor yelled.
It's not safe, Zoe added. The transmitter's live.
At the top of the shot tower, Jamie suddenly felt his skin prickle as he raced towards the transmitter, and he was overwhelmed by a fear he wasn't sure was his own. It'll disintegrate me, he thought, and he pictured it mentally with utter clarity. It was enough to instantly halt his charge and route him to the spot. In the dome below, Zoe and the doctor heard his whimpers.
Don't panic, Jamie. You're perfectly safe,
the doctor yelled into his radio before an arc of Varden lightning sent it flying from his hand.
Oh, very impressive, said the doctor defiantly.
But you'll need a lot more power than that if you want to invade the Earth.
The Varden energy shifted.
This is not an invasion,
it rasped.
This is a union. You are to become our allies.
Oh, dear.
Zoe looked puzzled.
Vardens like to join forces with other species, the doctor explained. In pure energy form, they're susceptible to interference. They can be swamped or modulated by more powerful signals. But they use that to their advantage, too. They can take on other races' attributes. If they wanted to become militaristic, they might team up with a race of warriors and absorb some of their nature. If they wanted to be devious, they might team up with one of my people.
And if we wish to spread an idea of ourselves cloaked in propaganda, we might choose to ally ourselves with the British. I taste your radio messages all around me. The noble, civilizing force of Britain, conquering hearts and minds as it creates an empire inside its subjects. Truly Varden genius. Conquest by idea. Imagine the British with Varden ideas underpinning them, their radio waves heading into space with the Varden signal within, wrapped in the Union Jack and building an empire in the stars.
I'd rather not, shuddered the Doctor. Besides, it's a little academic, isn't it? 1 week and Varden with a grandiose plan? Why all the talk, eh? Why haven't you just done it?
Because there's one last switch to flick, said Zoe softly. The Varden can't start its transmission while it's just energy. It needs a pair of willing hands.
Oh, there, then it's out of luck, began the Doctor.
Then he caught sight of Zoe's face. There was an unexpected fervour in her eyes.
Oh, no! Zoe!
I'm sorry, Doctor, she said, but I think the Varden might be right. Just imagine us and the Vardens as one, all we could achieve together, if we just stopped being alone.
No, Zoe, those aren't your thoughts. They're the Vardens. Imogen, please, if there's anything of you left, don't let this happen.
But it was too late. Zoe had flicked the last switch. The Varden energy coursed into the control panel with a crackling roar, disappearing entirely. Zoe snapped sharply back to normality as the Varden influence left her.
Oh, no! She cried. We've sent the Varden transmission! What can we do now?
Nothing, replied the Doctor.
For a moment, Zoe was aghast. Then the Doctor smiled.
I've been a tiny bit naughty, he began. A little while ago, I realised something had been manipulating us, some influence that got blotted out when we were by that shot tower. So I made my thoughts as messy and hard to read as I could and set a little trap.
He scooped up his radio.
Are you all right now, Jamie?
Oh, I'm fine.
I'm afraid those instructions I gave weren't for beaming a signal to the moon at all. They were for sending one down, straight into the middle of the shot tower.
So the Varden's loose in the tower now?
No, Zoe. You see, the tower's interior is rather well lined with lead from all that hot metal poured down it. And lead's a very poor transmitter of radiation. The Vardens detest it. I imagine ours will be bouncing off the walls.
So we've trapped her like an imp in a bottle, said Jamie.
Yes, Jamie. I'm sorry I couldn't tell you the plan before, but there was a danger the Varden might have had a peek in your mind while you were on top of the tower. That's why it had to be you up there. If I'd given Zoe the false instructions...
She'd have realised you were up to something.
Yes. I am sorry.
So how did you know the influence was Varden? Said Zoe suspiciously. The Doctor tapped his temple.
What mind readers don't always grasp when they poke about in a head like mine is how open they're leaving their own heads in return. That evening, the doctor set about dissipating the trapped Varden energy.
Far too dangerous to keep in the tower, he explained. And they'll be knocking it down before long.
With Jamie and Zoe's help, he unreeled long cables and connected them to the Dome of Discovery and Skylon.
They're clad in aluminium, you see. Very poor conductor.
The Varden will bleed out across them and slowly degrade into noise. He gave Zoe a comforting smile.
It'll be just like going to sleep, he lied.
Then he attached the cables to the tower and let the Varden disperse.
Rest now, he whispered. Join the ancestral song.
The Skylon and Dome of Discovery were dismantled in 1952. Newly re-elected Prime Minister Winston Churchill was wary of the vision of the future they represented and wanted them gone. They were broken up by a scrap metal firm based on Wood Lane in Shepherd's Bush, which sold them back to the public in hundreds of tiny aluminium mementos. It's unlikely any of those festival keepsakes held even the germ of an alien idea. It's even less likely any trace of Varden thought ever escaped that Wood Lane site by other means, slipping out to a wider world, or to the stars.